Today, I open the podcast with no jokes, no bits, no gimmicks, no nothing. I simply welcome you. I welcome you to Chip and Eric and Friends today.
Did you ever open with a gimmick?
I've had many gimmicks.
Have you?
Yeah.
What is your definition of a gimmick?
Like some sort of, the word gimmick just keeps coming to mind.
I know, I don't.
Like a sort of a corny thing that is like just to get people listening and involved and like it's.
A trick or a device intended to attract attention, publicity, or business.
There you go.
Are you tricking people?
Sometimes. There was that time I started with, and that is our reading today.
Mm. That was a trick. That was definitely a trick.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of tricks, today is day 117. We're reading 2 Samuel 17 and 18 and Mark 14, 1 through 25.
I truly wish you would have said, speaking of tricks, and then said all the wrong information there. But that's fine, Allison.
You said no
Today's
jokes.
A serious day. There are no jokes to be had. No laughter. No glee. No joy. Certainly nothing boisterous. And don't let me catch any of you behaving jovially.
Oh.
Or else.
All right. Oh. Okay.
It's a serious day.
Okay.
With Chip and Eric and Friends.
Okay.
2 Samuel chapter 17. Now Ahithophel urged Absalom, "Let me choose 12,000 men to start out after David tonight. I will catch up with him while he is weary and discouraged. He and his troops will panic, and everyone will run away. Then I will kill only the king, and I will bring all the people back to you as a bride returns to her husband. After all, it is only one man's life that you seek. Then you will be at peace with all the people." This plan seemed good to Absalom and to all the elders of Israel.
Hushai counters Ahithophel's advice. But then Absalom said, "Bring in Hushai the Archite. Let's see what he thinks about this." When Hushai arrived, Absalom told him what Ahithophel had said. Then he asked, "What is your opinion? Should we follow Ahithophel's advice? If not, what do you suggest?" "Well," Hushai replied to Absalom, "this time Ahithophel has made a mistake. You know your father and his men. They are mighty warriors. Right now they are enraged as a mother bear who has been robbed of her cubs. And remember that your father is an experienced man of war. He won't be spending the night among the troops. He is probably already hidden in some pit or cave. And when he comes out and attacks and a few of your men fall, there will be panic among your troops. And the word will spread that Absalom's men are being slaughtered. Then even the bravest soldiers, though they have the heart of a lion, will be paralyzed with fear. For all Israel knows what a mighty warrior your father is and how courageous his men are. I recommend that you mobilize the entire army of Israel, bringing them as far away as Dan in the north and Beersheba in the south. That way you will have an army as numerous as the sand on the seashore. And I advise that you personally lead the troops. When we find Daniel..." Okay. I didn't do that on purpose.
Good. No jokes.
"When we find David, we'll fall on him like dew that falls on the ground. Then neither he or any of his men will be left alive. And if David were to escape into some town, you will have all Israel there at your command. Then we can take ropes and drag the walls of the town into the nearest valley until every stone is torn down." Then Absalom and all the men of Israel said, "Hushai's advice is better than Ahithophel's, for the Lord had determined to defeat the counsel of Ahithophel, which really was a better plan so that he could bring disaster on Absalom."
Hushai warns David to escape. Hushai told Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, what Ahithophel had said to Absalom and the elders of Israel and what he himself had advised instead. "Quick," he told them, "find David and urge him not to stay at the shallows of the Jordan River tonight. He must go across at once into the wilderness beyond. Otherwise, he will die and his entire army with him." Jonathan and Ahimaaz had been staying at En-Rogel so as not to be seen entering and leaving the city. Arrangements had been made for a servant girl to bring them the message they were to take to King David. But a boy spotted them at En-Rogel, and he told Absalom about it. So they quickly escaped to Baharim, where a man hid them down inside a well in his courtyard. The man's wife put a cloth over the top of the well and scattered grain on it to dry in the sun, so no one suspected they were there. When Absalom's men arrived, they asked her, "Have you seen Ahimaaz and Jonathan?" The woman replied, "They were here, but they crossed over the brook." Absalom's men looked for them without success and returned to Jerusalem. Then the two men crawled out of the well and hurried on to King David. "Quick," they told him, "cross the Jordan tonight." And they told him how Ahithophel had advised that he be captured and killed. So David and all the people with him went across the Jordan River during the night, and they were all on the other bank before dawn. When Ahithophel realized that his advice had not been followed, he saddled his donkey, went to his hometown, set his affairs in order, and hanged himself. He died there and was buried in the family tomb. David soon arrived at Mahanaim. By now, Absalom had mobilized the entire army of Israel and was leading his troops across the Jordan River. Absalom had appointed Amasa as commander of his army, replacing Joab, who had been the commander under David. Amasa was Joab's cousin. His father was Jether, an Ishmaelite. His mother, Abigail, daughter of Nahash, was the sister of Joab's mother, Zeruiah. Absalom and the Israelite army set up camp in the land of Gilead. When David arrived at Mahanaim, he was warmly greeted by Sholai, son of Nahash, who had come from Rabbah of the Ammonites, and by Machir, son of Ammiel from Lo Debar, and by Barzillai of Gilead and from Rogalim. They had brought sleeping mats, cooking pots, serving bowls, wheat and barley, flour and roasted grain, beans, lentils, honey, butter, sheep, goats, and cheese for David and those who were with him. For they said, "You must all be very hungry and tired and thirsty after your long march through the wilderness."
2 Samuel chapter 18, Absalom's defeat and death. David now mustered the men who were with him and appointed generals and captains to lead them. He sent the troops out in three groups, placing one group under Joab, one under Joab's brother Abishai, son of Zeruiah, and one under Ittai, the man from Gath. The king told his troops, "I am going out with you." But his men objected strongly. "You must not go," they urged. "If we have to turn and run, and even half of us die, it will make no difference to Absalom's troops. They will be looking only for you. You are worth 10,000 of us, and it is better that you stay here in the town and send help if we need it. If you think that that's best plan, we'll do it," the king answered. He stood alongside the gate of the town and as all the troops marched out in groups of hundreds and thousands. And the king gave his command to Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, "For my sake, deal gently with young Absalom." And all the troops heard the king give this order to his commanders. So the battle began in the forest of Ephraim, and the Israelite troops were beaten back by David's men. There was a great slaughter that day, and 20,000 men laid down their lives. The battle raged all across the countryside, and more men died because of the forest than were killed by the sword. During the battle, Absalom happened to come upon some of David's men. He tried to escape on his mule, but as he rode beneath the thick branches of a great tree, his hair got caught in the tree. His mule kept going and left him dangling in the air. One of David's men saw what had happened and told Joab, "I saw Absalom dangling from a great tree." "What?" Joab demanded. "You saw him there and you didn't kill him? I would have rewarded you with 10 pieces of silver and a hero's belt." "I would not kill the king's son for even 1,000 pieces of silver," the man replied to Joab. "We all heard the king say to you and Abishai and Ittai, 'For my sake, please spare young Absalom.' And if I have betrayed the king by killing his son, and the king would certainly find out who did it, you yourself would be the first to abandon me." "Enough of this nonsense," Joab said. Then he took 3 daggers and plunged them into Absalom's heart as he dangled still alive in the great tree. 10 of Joab's young armor bearers then surrounded Absalom and killed him. Then Joab blew the ram's horn, and his men returned from chasing the army of Israel. They threw Absalom's body in a deep pit in the forest and piled a great heap of stones over it, and all Israel fled to their homes. During his lifetime, Absalom had built a monument to himself in the king's valley, for he said, "I have no son to carry on my name." He named the monument after himself, and it is known as Absalom's Monument to this day.
David mourns Absalom's death. Then Zadok's son Ahimaaz said, "Let me run to the king with the good news that the Lord has rescued him from his enemies." "No," Joab told him, it wouldn't be good news to the king that his son is dead. You can be my messenger another time, but not today." Then Joab said to a man from Ethiopia, "Go tell the king what you have seen." And the man bowed and ran off. But Ahimaaz continued to plead with Joab, "Whatever happens, please let me go too." "Why should you go, my son?" Joab replied. "There will be no reward for your news." "Yes, but let me go anyway," he begged. Joab finally said, "All right, go ahead." So Ahimaaz took the less demanding route by way of the plain and ran to Mahanaim ahead of the Ethiopian. While David was sitting between the inner and outer gates of the town, the watchman climbed the roof of the gateway by the wall. As he looked, he saw a lone man running toward them. He shouted the news down to David, and the king replied, "If he is alone, he has news." As the messenger came closer, the watchman saw another man running toward them. He shouted, "Here comes another one." The king replied, "He will also have news." "The first man runs like Ahimaaz, son of Zadok," the watchman said. "He is a good man and comes with good news," the king replied. Then Ahimaaz cried out to the king, "Everything is all right." He bowed before the king with his face to the ground and said, "Praise to the Lord your God, who has handed over the rebels who dared to stand against my lord the king." "What about young Absalom?" the king demanded. "Is he all right?" Ahimaaz replied, "When Joab told me to come, there was a lot of commotion, but I didn't know what was happening." "Wait here," the king told him, so Ahimaaz stepped aside. Then the man from Ethiopia arrived and said, "I have good news for my lord the king. Today the Lord has rescued you from all those who rebelled against you." "What about young Absalom?" the king demanded. "Is he all right?" And the Ethiopian replied, "May all your enemies, my lord the king, both now and in the future, share the fate of that young man." The king was overcome with emotion. He went up to the room over the gateway and burst into tears. And as he went, he cried, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died instead of you. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son."
All right, moving on over to Mark chapter 14, verses 1 through 25. Mark chapter 14, Jesus anointed at Bethany. It was now 2 days before Passover and the festival of unleavened bread. The leading priests and the teachers of religious law were still looking for an opportunity to capture Jesus secretly and kill him, but not during the Passover celebration. They agreed, or the people may riot. Meanwhile, Jesus was in Bethany at the home of Simon, a man who had previously had leprosy. While he was eating, a woman came in with a beautiful alabaster jar of expensive perfume and made from essence of nard. She broke open the jar and poured the perfume over his head. Some of those at the table were indignant. "Why waste such expensive perfume?" they asked. It could have been sold for a year's wages and the money given to the poor. So they scolded her harshly. But Jesus said, "Leave her alone. Why criticize her for doing..." My page won't turn. "For doing such a good thing to me. You will always have the poor among you, and you can help them whenever you want to, but you will not always have me. She has done what she could and has anointed my body for burial ahead of time. I tell you the truth, wherever the good news is preached throughout the world, this woman's deed will be remembered and discussed."
Judas agrees to betray Jesus. Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12 disciples, went to the leading priest to arrange to betray Jesus to them. They were delighted when they heard why he had come, and they promised to give him money. So he began looking for an opportunity to betray Jesus.
The Last Supper. On the first day of the festival of unleavened bread, when the Passover lamb is sacrificed, Jesus' disciples asked him, "Where do you want us to go to prepare the Passover meal for you?" So Jesus sent two of them into Jerusalem with these instructions. "As you go into the city, a man carrying a pitcher of water will meet you. Follow him. At the house he enters, say to the owner, 'The teacher asks, where is the guest room where I can eat Passover meal with my disciples?' He will take you upstairs to a large room that is already set up. That is where you should prepare our meal." So the two disciples went into the city and found everything just as Jesus had said, and they prepared the Passover meal there. In the evening, Jesus arrived with the 12. As they were at the table eating, Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, one of you eating with me will betray me." Greatly distressed, each one asked in return, "Am I the one?" He replied, It is one of you 12 who is eating from this bowl with me. For the Son of Man must die, as the Scriptures declared long ago. But how terrible it will be for the one who betrays him. It will be far better for that man to have never been born." As they were eating, Jesus took some bread and blessed it. Then he broke it into pieces and gave it to the disciples, saying, Take it, for this is my body." And he took the cup of wine and gave thanks to God for it. He gave it to them, and they all drank from it. And he said to them, "This is my blood, which confirms the covenant between God and his people. It is poured out as a sacrifice for many. I tell you the truth, I will not drink wine again until the day I drink it in the new kingdom of God." Then they sang a hymn and went out to the Mount of Olives.
And that is our reading today. And we read an extra verse today.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
That's weird though. I wouldn't have expected to stop because I have a tight.
Yeah, me too. On a normal day, I would make a joke. I would say something witty or funny. I would banter. But not today. Today is serious day.
Okay.
And we read this in the most serious fashion.
We did.
With two serious, equally Please let me finish. With two equally serious questions in mind. I'm not laughing. That was a slight cough.
Nope, it was a laugh.
No, because it's serious day. How does this help me love God more? And how does this help me love others more? So, Allison.
Oh, goodness.
Did you forget the questions?
No, I
serious
didn't.
Serious question, not a joke.
Right. Let's go with... let's go with how does this help me love God more?
Okay. I'm ready.
I am just drawn, again, to the idea that Jesus knew that Judas was going to betray him. Mm-hmm. Jesus, it was one of his disciples. They were close. I wonder, I guess this is a hard question, like how long was that the plan from the beginning? Did he know it the whole time? Did he know it the second he met him?
I assume so. Yeah, I assume so.
So I guess, like, because I'm not God and I'm a human, I guess for me it would be really, really difficult to lose. I would lose focus. I would have a hard time walking along with this guy and doing life with this guy and ministry with this guy and being like, you're the one, you know? That would be hard for me. But I guess it helps me love God more just knowing that Jesus never, he never took his eyes off of his mission, what he came to do.
Right.
And nothing changed it. Mm-hmm. Nothing distracted him. Nothing stopped him. He never, I mean, at what point would I have been tempted to say something to Judas? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just along the way. How many times did Judas probably tell him, I love you? Mm-hmm. Or say, you know, or hug him or all the things. And it would have been hard for me to not get distracted by just the fact that you're going to betray me. You're terrible. Mm-hmm. But he never got distracted by that. And not only that, he didn't treat him any differently than he did anybody else.
Right.
He washed his feet too.
Yep.
You know? So just, I feel like it's such a lesson to be learned in, no matter how terrible someone can be around you, it doesn't have to distract from your ministry. Mm-hmm. You know? It doesn't have to. It's hard for it to not, but it doesn't have to. Jesus set an example for us there.
Yeah. And that's how you love God more?
Yeah.
Okay. I love that. There's two that stand out to me for how this helps me love others more.
Okay.
First one is how David mourns for Absalom.
Yeah.
I think, remember, David's a terrible dad.
Yes. Yes.
But when Tamar is raped, David's furious. Mm-hmm. And then when Amnon, Tamar's rapist, gets killed, he's furious and he sends his son away, Absalom, he sends him away. Mm-hmm. Then he lets him come back but says, I'll never see you again. So he comes back. And then by the time he's by the time he mourns for Absalom, it's obviously too late. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's like all of this could have been avoided if terrible dad David just stepped it up, you know, and did better from the start. So I think that there's something there, you know, like forgive people while it's not too late, you know, and love people despite what they've done to you. And like there's very little we're able to say, I'm going to cut you off forever for. Mm-hmm. So I just think that that's something. The other thing is, and with Judas, I just want to say this woman with the alabaster jar, it's Judas who complains, mm-hmm. right? Let's mm-hmm. not forget, it's not in Mark, it's elsewhere, I think it's in Matthew. It's Judas who complains, and it even says, because he wanted to steal the money.
Because he was worried about the poor.
Yeah, no, he was the treasurer, and he liked to take money from the bag, the purse, right? But, you know, this woman is, it's special and unique because it's Jesus, and he's there, and he's being anointed, and it's like, you know, and there's a lot more to this contextually, and it's like, a sign of her repentance because this jar was only for prostitutes to have and like those kinds of things. And there's a lot in there, but I think like when somebody is attempting to worship God, the last thing God wants us to do is to step in and say, like, but no, you could have cared for the poor.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, they're doing their best in their way.
Yeah.
You know, as long as they're worshiping in spirit and in truth, then there's no correction that needs to be made. So I just think, you know, sometimes we can be a little bit like, we can become gatekeepers about that.
Don't you think you see that all the time nowadays? And that may be one of those things that you just see it more because now we have social media and you see, I'm constantly seeing people criticizing others for how, you know, something they say or picking apart something that they say, like, well, actually, and it's like, but
I'm obviously guilty of that. Like, I think if you've listened to this podcast long enough, you'd know that that would be something I'd fall into. But yeah, just like growing out of that is so important. You know, and there is a time for correction. Don't get me wrong. I mean, if there's like serious doctrinal error, like, don't get me wrong. But if somebody in their own private worship life is worshiping in a way that maybe doesn't mesh with you, or you think, oh, well, they could have done this instead, how beneficial would that be? Mm-hmm. You know, now there are times for correction. Like, there's this, I can't remember what the cost is on it. My dad sent it to me. Big shout out to my mom and dad. It's like a $3.5 million stained glass window that some church put up in Kansas City. It's like the largest stained glass window or something. I don't know. It's so stupid. That's one where you can say, hey, couldn't you have taken care of some poor people with that?
Right.
You know, like,
right.
Come on now.
Yeah.
But that's not the same because it's not, they're not worshiping.
Using
they're building
it for
a monument.
Right.
They're building a monument.
Yeah.
And, or, you know, worse, a golden calf. Like, if something happened and that window was destroyed, like, think of the weeping over a window if that would happen, you know? Like, so I just, you know, there is time for correction, but then also there's not. And mm-hmm. we need to be really careful about drawing that line. Because the whole well actually thing, I am so good at that. I do that all the time. You know, it, more and more it's becoming internalized. But, you know, it is something I struggle with for sure.
It's easy to, especially the more you learn.
Yeah, knowledge puffs up, right?
Yeah.
So infusing that knowledge with love is just so important. That's 1 Corinthians 13 for you. Yep.
Well, what a good, serious day.
It was very serious. It was an extremely serious time for all of us.
Now, can we frolic?
No, Chip is out frolicking right now.
I thought we could join him.
No, he prefers to frolic alone. He made that very clear.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize
that. He said it's like a big thing for him.
I'm glad you told me. I would have been embarrassed if I had tried to.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I won't go frolic with Chip.
Good.
Frolic by myself.
I think frolicking is something to do on a day that's not so serious anyway.
Okay.
You know, it's a very serious day, I think.
Okay.
There are some things we can go do that would be, you know, serious enough. Math. You could go do some recreational math.
Okay.
Math. Recreational math. Didn't want anyone to think that I'd said meth.
Oh, I was like,
yeah,
lost.
So you could do some recreational math.
Math.
You could organize. You could do some organizing. Mm-hmm. Color coding some folders and putting in dividers and.
Okay. Could I put a puzzle together? Is that?
It depends on the nature of the subject of the puzzle.
Okay.
If it was just an entirely black puzzle, then yes.
Okay.
If there's nothing on there. Or like maybe a tasteful portrait of white Jesus as a puzzle.
Okay.
Not the real Jesus.
Right.
But, you know, white Mormon Jesus would be okay.
All right, well, we'll get on that. And
metal forging.
Okay.
That's very serious. You know, Alaskan crab fishing. I think that would be
that's
a good
pretty
serious thing to...
That's pretty serious.
So anyway, I hope all of you enjoy the day. The very serious day.
Yes.
And make sure you get out and go watch the sunset over Lake Michigan.
Yes, definitely do that.
That'll help you with the seriousness as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, we love you guys.
No.
Keep doing your challenge.
Not serious enough. Oh, the challenge is serious.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't talked about the challenge at all.
It's okay.
Okay. All right. Seriously.
All right.
It's time to go.
Okay.